Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for February 2nd, 2023. It's Thursday. Hi, Dave.
Hey, and it's Groundhog Day, Melody.
I know. Tell that to the folks in Texas.
Yeah, I know, right? Pennsylvania natives, you and I know that on this hallowed day since 1887, that great but soft-spoken statesman from Gobbler's Knob, Punxsutawney, PA, named Phil, emerges from his long winter nap to see if he can see his shadow. And lore has it, for those of you not in the know, that if the sun is out and Phil sees his shadow, there will be six more weeks of winter. So Phil retreats back into his den and goes back to sleep for another month and a half. I mean, who doesn't like a little more sleep, right, Melody?
Absolutely.
But if it's cloudy outside and Phil doesn't see his shadow, the soothsaying groundhog remains outside to play with his human friends, and townspeople there celebrate, knowing spring is just around the corner. Well, what's in store this year? Let me put it this way. Don't put those winter coats away just yet. Phil saw his shadow this morning, so get used to six more weeks of winter weather. By the way, over the last 75 years, Punxsutawney Phil has correctly predicted whether there will be an early spring 69% of the time. I wonder what he's predicting for gold and silver this year, Melody.
Well, today's not a good day for predictions for gold and silver.
I guess we see what happens when he doesn't see his shadow.
Even gold didn't like another 6 weeks of winter. It went in and hid. It went back into its hold to go back to sleep. But hey, it's a great buying opportunity today. And you know, it's funny, the dollar only showed a little bit of strength, 0.55, 101.71 for the USDX. And really the markets, I don't think really did all that much today. But we'll talk about them here in just a little bit. But a big pullback just for today. And we'll have to see what the job market does tomorrow. 1,913 down 38 bucks. So silver was down a little more, a little over 2% at $23.53. Platinum was up 19, though, 1,033. Palladium was down 12 at 1,736. Crude oil today was down 0.59 at 75.82. And the paper markets today, well, they did have S&P had a pretty good turnaround, but the Dow was down 39 points at 34,053. S&P was up 1.5%, 4,179. Then the NASDAQ, 3.25% at 12,200. And European markets, my computer is very slow today. Let's go to Asian markets. Hang Seng was lower. Europe was positive. 10-year yield, 3.39%. So that's still lower today. And we've got natural gas down to 2.457. It was just down a little less than 0.5%. So, you know, I guess everybody's still talking about the rate increase and so forth. Before we go there, we can take, oh, it's jobless claims Thursday, right, Dave? And so we have applications for jobless aid fell again last week, lowest level since April. You know, those with a glass half full see further evidence that the job market has withstood aggressive rate hikes by the Fed. Not compared to all the articles that we read. The Labor Department reported this morning that applications for jobless aids for the week ending January 28th fell by 3% last week to 183,000. It was the third straight week. Claims were under 200,000. And as we all know, the Fed raised its lending rate by a 25 basis point. And let's see. So now it's at 4.75%. This is the highest level in 15 years. So let's travel back to 15 years and see what's happening back then. Interesting. Fed chair, Powell appears to suggest that the Fed foresees two additional quarter point rate hikes. And what else you got there, Dave?
I think significantly yesterday the government reported that job openings rose to 11 million in December, 600,000 from November, and the highest since July. So for 18 straight months, employers have posted at least 10 million openings. That's a level that was reached never before 2021, in data going back to 2000. So the number of openings meant that there were about two vacancies for every unemployed American. Last month's job reports told a similar story. Employers adding 223,000 jobs in December. Labor Department releases its monthly jobs report for January tomorrow. Bobby and Butch will report on that. Analysts expect a number of about 185,000, which would be the lowest number in more than 2 years. Now, the civilian labor force as of December was about 250,000 higher than it was in February 2020, right before the pandemic was declared. That is 165 million versus roughly 164.7 million back then. So that's an interesting development. We'll see if that holds, which kind of suggests that some of these added jobs are actually new ones. Now, over the last two-plus years, you know, we're just getting back to the level that we were at before those woeful shutdowns occurred. But we'll have to look into that a little bit more closely. At the same time, there's slowing wage growth, which is another one of the Fed's goals. I think they think if they can slow down wage growth, that perhaps there won't be as many jobs lost. Time will tell about that, Melody, particularly with layoffs mounting the last couple of months in the tech sector.
Yeah, it's really kind of funny, though, that they want to slow down wage growth, all right, because that's what keeps everything going. And it's just like, at least they don't have to talk about, you know, now they're talking about like it is really a good thing, but yet it really is not a good thing not to have wage growth slow down. And it's just,
Yeah, I mean, it slows down, doesn't have to slow down a whole heck of a lot these days for there to be actual real wage losses. That is, you know, with inflation calculated in there, you know, you talk about a net loss in income. And it's not just, you know, like a tenth or two-tenths of a percent. We're talking about a couple of percentage points. So that's a significant loss in purchasing power for everyday Americans. You know, we talked about the other day, you know, the ones, the top 1%, top tenth of a percent, they don't have to worry about it so much. CEOs, the C-suiters, they're sitting pretty pretty sweet. The rest of us, well, paycheck to paycheck.
Well, you know, it's funny though. Wage growth isn't strong to begin with in this country.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean, isn't that one of the biggest problems? Even before, you know, they were looking for some slowdown in wage growth. There wasn't any wage growth. It was very minimal to begin with, but. You know, and they would all applaud and get all rosy-eyed and cheery and so forth. Oh, wage growth. Oh, wow, that's really good. No. So, again, they really kind of distort those numbers. And but, yeah, certainly it's when it is now slowing down with the higher inflation, it's just really, you know. And, again, you know, Powell comes out and said yesterday, we talked about this briefly yesterday, I think it's for the first time that the disinflationary process has started. Just like inflation is transitory. You know, it's like, how can anybody take these people serious? They get the big bucks. And yet, again, it's not what they do, it's what they say that has big impacts than what they actually do, bigger impacts than what they actually do. And that is per an Alan Greenspan. And, you know, Wall Street always loved Alan Greenspan. So disinflationary process has started. When he said that yesterday, yeah, we saw gold rise and so forth. So maybe that doesn't apply today, Dave. Was that disinflationary process was just for a one day wonder yesterday? I don't know. You know, it's just, you know, kind of funny what they say. We saw that the global financial markets didn't buy it. You know, these markets are still betting that inflation is going to fall rapidly. And that they're hoping that these rate cuts are going to arrive sooner than the central bankers themselves think and certainly say. You can hear the debate, Dave, where you have people out there saying that he has to continue to raise rates. He has to continue to raise rates. And then we all know that this whole world is based on easy money.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't want to be between that rock and a hard place, that's for sure.
There are a lot of people in that tight squeeze right now that I think, you know, are just saying, ouch, get me out of here. And the big question this year is, who's right? You know, either the Fed and other central banks will end up reversing themselves and cutting rates relatively soon, or markets are going to back down if policymakers follow through on their stated plans. In his news conference yesterday, Powell said there's a difference in perspective by some market measures on how fast inflation will come down, adding it would be very premature to declare victory or to think that we've really got this. Well, we can take that got this in a couple of different ways. They certainly didn't get transitory correct. I'm not sure they got what's going on. Either. You know, it's the same across the Atlantic with Bank of England and ECB both hiked rates. We'll talk about that in a second. Andrew Bailey, the Bank of England governor, said, page out of Powell's book, it's too soon to declare victory just yet. We need to be absolutely sure that we are really turning the corner on inflation. Hey, and they raised rates 50 basis points. Anyway, it's a difficult world out there.
Yeah, it is. And you know what I think for 2023, I think neither one will be correct, because I think there's going to be other factors that are playing into this, that having them raise rates or lower rates, I'm not quite sure. I do believe they're going to, if the markets begin to fall apart, they will lower rates. They just will. I don't know how far the market has to drop for them to do it. But if it drops far enough, yeah, they're going to stop raising rates. I don't know how far they can keep raising rates, because, again, these multinational these corporations, they can't service their debts. They can't service their debt because the rates are getting too high. But what I found interesting, though, Dave, is we have him raising a quarter points, but yet the 10-year yield is still falling.
I know. That's a real interesting paradox there.
Yeah, so that doesn't, and when things like that doesn't make sense, there's certainly things in the background that are going on that we're not privy to. You know, and it could be to the point of, you've got, even if you have other nations dumping the dollar, dumping, you know, their that would kind of make the rates rise too. So something is, you know, they're doing a lot of things in the background that I'm sure we don't know. And
Well, the other thing that's going on that we haven't talked about, and you haven't seen very much of at all, is the quantitative tightening. What's going on? Yeah. Selling off of the treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. They've sold over, well, I think it's $445, $450 billion. So, I mean, that's got to start to have an effect on credit in the private sector. But we'll look into that a little bit more in next week, one of the shows next week programs. I'll we'll talk about that more.
Yeah, that would be interesting because there's, they think they can adjust things by, moving up, moving down, adjust this, just, and yeah, things just aren't. I also saw, remember the, that started back in 2019, the aftermarket.
Right.
There's been a ton of money, investment money flowing into that area lately. I mean, so it's like, my question is, instead of governments now bailing out people, you have BlackRock bailing out. You have all these other huge hedge funds that are bailing out. And BlackRock put a ton of money into, that crypto bank. You really think it's – yeah. Well, it was one of their – it was one of their banks. I can't recall which one it was. So it's kind of like, yeah, they're just holding things up and doing what's to create the illusion that all is okay. You mentioned that the ECB raised their rates another, 50 basis point, a half point hike, a half a percentage point, and it wants to do another move in March in a very similar area. The ECB policymakers are moving aggressively to choke off price spikes that have slowed from record highs, but are still hurting households in the 20 countries that use the euro currency. The bank, which also hiked by a half a point in December, will stay the course in raising rates significantly at a steady pace. But what about after March? Does that mean you have to reach the pinnacle or your peak? And Christine Lagarde, the ECB president, said, no. We know that we have ground to cover. We know that we are not done. So,
yeah, she apparently was portrayed as optimistic overall, pointing to easing supply chain backups and Europe's natural gas supply becoming more secure after Russia cut off most of it to Europe, saying that the Eurozone economy has proved more resilient than expected and should recover over the coming quarters.
Oh, I hear the music, and that means we're heading into the first break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We got some fractional quarter ounce gold eagles in. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. There's a nice little product to have. The 1/10th ounce are just too expensive. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, but the quarter ounce aren't priced too bad. And with this little drop in gold, it's a nice time to be picking them up. And I just want to let the listeners know, those of you who have orders and packages, with the ice hitting Texas, I'll tell you what, it has put a big damper on packages being shipped in and out of Texas. FedEx has basically been down since Tuesday. We do a lot of our larger orders through FedEx out of our depository in Texas. And so so you just have to be patient. And I pulled up Dallas's weather today. They're still getting their temperature now is 33 degrees with rain. And what happens is then overnight it freezes and everything ices all up all over again. So one of my customers today from Austin, she told me, she says, well, tomorrow it's supposed to be warming up into the 40s, Saturdays in the 50s, and Sundays into the 60s. So that should eliminate quite a bit of that ice, and packages should begin flowing. So even if we ship something by registered and insured U.S. mail heading into Texas, I'm sure that things are on hold until that gets a little bit better. So, yeah, Texas has been devastated. And I can remember, Dave, I had an ice storm. I think it was a half an inch. Maybe it was 3/4 inch. We had no power for 3-4 days. And it really looked like a war zone when you drove in and around town. I was living in the town of Sedalia. I mean, the number of trees and branches, trees just stripped. It looked like a tornado had gone through, or it looked like a war zone. It's just horrible what that ice can do. And
nature is scenic, but she can be destructive.
Yes. And she also told me every time, I talked to her twice on the phone yesterday and today, each time she says, I just heard another branch go down, it's dangerous, and it's frightening, and it's so be safe for those of you in Texas. Let's go ahead and, I'm no fan of Berkshire Hathaway. I'm no fan of Warren Buffett, and I'm certainly no fan of Charlie Munger, because those are the guys they think, and he's 99 years old, so I'm not questioning his mental capacity, but, when you're 99, I just happen to agree with what he's talking about. So maybe he's still pretty sharp for a 99-year-old when it comes to this. But they used to say, you don't want to buy gold. It's a and it does nothing. And it's just like, okay, well, mm-hmm. But I had the same inside trading information as you guys do. Gold might be a little bit higher. But anyway, the 99-year-old wrote in an op-ed yesterday, a cryptocurrency is not a currency. Where have you heard that before? It's not a commodity. Where did you hear that before? And a not a security. I tell you that all the time. It's a gambling contract with a nearly 100% edge for the house. Entered in a country where gambling contracts are traditionally regulated only by states that compete in laxity. Obviously, he said, the U.S. should now enact a new federal law that prevents this from happening. Munger's latest comments come as the crypto industry was plagued with problems, from failed projects to the liquidity crunch, the problem of FTX. The crypto market lost more than $2 trillion in value last year. I don't think they got it back this year so far. Even though Bitcoin is up, they didn't get back their $2 trillion. The price of Bitcoin, the world's largest cryptocurrency, plunged 65% in 2022. It's now trading at $2,380. And Munger said in go ahead, Dave.
Oh, that's okay. I think notably he said recently that privately owned companies have issued, well, in recent years, privately owned companies have issued thousands of new cryptocurrencies. They become publicly traded. And here's the catch, without any governmental pre-approval of disclosures to prospective buyers. And in this case, a lot of those prospective buyers are everyday Americans who still don't know a whole lot about cryptos, what they do, how they're controlled by blockchain, et cetera, et cetera. Now, some have been sold to a promoter for almost nothing, after which the public buys in at much higher prices. And again, without fully understanding how you get out of it, and so much is in favor of the promoter. Munger listed two interesting precedents that he hopes will guide the U.S. into action. First, China has strictly prohibited services offering trading, order matching, token issuance, and derivatives for virtual currencies. Second, and this dating back to the early 1700s, the English Parliament has banned all public trading in new common stocks and kept this ban in place for about 100 years. So Munger asks, well, what should the U.S. do after a ban of cryptocurrencies is in place? Well, he says, thank the Chinese communist leader for a splendid example of uncommon sense. I think the bigger question first is, how do we get this ban passed from a Congress controlled by special interests and their money?
Well, it doesn't matter what the administration is, it's always that, and it's not going to change. And you're right about that. It doesn't matter who's in office, and if it would pass, something would pass, your Senate's going to, it's the same old story. And but what's interesting is, and Dave, I wonder though, because a lot of this cryptocurrencies, I'm sorry, is still used on the dark web. You don't hear anybody talking much about the dark web anymore. I'm assuming it still exists.
No, absolutely.
And I'm sure it's dark web for a reason. And the more technology advances, I'm sure the darker it gets. And you can't do anything on the dark web unless you have a cryptocurrency. So, that's my personal opinion, why they don't want to ban or regulate. Because there's still a lot of money to be made. And, it's everybody's fingers are in the, perhaps somehow. And that's just my own personal view and opinion, but you can't tell me that doesn't have some impact on why they just continue to ignore these cryptocurrencies without regulations and so forth. It's got to be a deeper reason, and that's the only one I can think of. But and plus, a Ponzi scheme, those at the top always make the most money, right? And you've got all these people, these professional football people, the movie stars, these actors, the actresses, and all of these other, you know, headliners supporting it and everything. What do you think they get paid? Tons. This is interesting, Dave. More people are tapping into the retirement savings. And last year, among, you know, the highest inflation that we've had in four decades. Now, these are Vanguard 401k accounts. This is a record number. 2.8% tapped into those and pulled funds out last year, the Vanguard 401k accounts. 2.8% pulled funds out of those last year. That's well above the typical 2% rate before the pandemic and is up 33%. In 2021. This decision to tap into the retirement accounts was likely brought about by financial hardships, of course, and moves by the government that now make it a little easier for those account holders to withdraw the money. Fiona Gregg, global head of investor research and policy at Vanguard, said the high number of the withdrawals is evidence that some families may be feeling the pinch and drawing on their 401k balances to relieve the financial stress. Inflation-adjusted wages have been falling, meaning that the workers have less purchasing power. And we mentioned that in the first segment of the program, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have anything else to add except that pulling money out of a lot of retirement accounts, not all, but most, comes with a price. The owner has to pay income taxes on the funds at the time of withdrawal, and people under 59 and a half usually face a 10% early withdrawal penalty. So just be careful out there, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, and I wonder, because I know talking to a lot of my customers, people are concerned about leaving their money in these accounts because they see what is happening, and they are concerned. And instead of just pulling it out for inflation, how many just pulled it out to get it out of those accounts so they could safeguard it in a different manner? We reported yesterday how much the central banks have been buying gold, and even the retail investor has gone into gold. So am I stretching it here? No, I'm not. But it makes it sound more feasible because everybody talks about inflation, and I'm not so sure they're pulling it out so they can, because of hardships, but maybe they're pulling it out to protect what they have, knowing that, or they're feeling uncomfortable with just leaving it there with the fear of losing more. The Fed chair yesterday talked a little bit about his outlook for inflation. But I guess a little bit was also about the debt ceiling standoff. The debate itself is a fiscal issue between Congress and the executive branch. But if it turns into a crisis with a U.S. default or some other extreme outcomes on the table, it would inevitably involve the Fed. And because the Fed acts as a fiscal agent for the government, essentially serving the same role for the Treasury, the New York Fed operates Treasury debt auctions, so it would be in the middle if demand falters for the U.S. government bonds or if the government attempts to avoid breaching the debt limit through novel strategies. And that's one thing they always do come up with, some very novel strategies. The Fed also maintains the government's operating costs in the attempt to prioritize payments, for example. Making good on interest payments but delaying paying military contractors would be a profound operational challenge, Dave.
Yeah, it would. But for now, the administration is disinclined, they say, to exploit a legal loophole by minting a large denomination platinum coin, say of $1 trillion, and depositing at the Fed, thus
that's so ridiculous. I know.
Foregoing, yes, any crisis. But if it did, the Fed would have to decide whether to accept the deposit, and it could face litigation regardless of its decision. Then, of course, there are the risks to financial markets and the economy overall, which is to say all of us, if there is a technical default on bonds, which economists across partisan lines see as a potential catastrophe. The Fed would immediately face questions as to whether it should suspend quantitative tightening. That's already withdrawn nearly $500 billion of liquidity from the Treasury market, as we mentioned earlier, or even start buying bonds again. The Fed cherishes its independence and certainly doesn't like getting caught up in the middle of political disputes like this one inevitably will be. But with the way things are going, Melody, it probably won't have much choice. We shall see.
We shall see. You know, and again, this is one where we go through the same thing every time. Well, I don't think we did it the last time because there was an election coming up, and they were pretty quick to, well, let's just extend it till this. Oh, let's just extend it, you know. And but they do. And, you know, hey, they'll shut down some portions of the government and think it's a big deal and all this kind of stuff and whatnot. And, you know, and it's business as usual. And then they all will come to an agreement and blah, 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 and they'll raise it. You know, the Republicans will all do their stance to, you know, have their constituents look at them like they're some kind of a hero or something, that they're really standing the ground. And the only thing that they're standing in is they're standing on stage, you know, and that's all an act. One of these days, though, I don't think it's going to be a politician who says, we're not going to raise it and we're going to default. I think it'll be from some sort of a external catastrophic event that could eventually do it. But there's a lot of things brewing around the world, and it can come from anywhere. But I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But so anyway, it's interesting that, this guy's just not stepping down from his position. He's actually withdrawing from politics. So maybe the cartel down there has gotten to him, Mexico's president. You know, maybe the cartel has gotten pretty strong in the last couple years down in Mexico. But the Mexican president, his term ends September 2024, and he's going to totally withdraw from politics. They thought that maybe he might remain in power behind the scenes. But he vowed at his daily press briefing today that he would not mix with politicians, speak about politics, or even appear at political events. So he's going to completely retire. He will never again appear at any public event. Sounds like he's running scared. We'll be right back because we're running into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio, Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. I think I'm in a doo-wop diddy diddy state of mind today, thanks to Groundhog Day, despite Phil's prognostication. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients. This final segment, you know where to get her, 800-375-4188. We'll start this last segment following up on Melody and Butch's discussion yesterday, World Gold Council's year-end review. As they told you, gold demand soared to a decade high last year on the back of what it calls colossal central bank purchases aided by vigorous retail investor buying. Annual gold demand jumped 18%, 4,741 tons. That excludes over-the-counter trading. That's the largest annual figure since 2011. And that was fueled by record fourth-quarter demand of, about 1,337 tons, the council says. The key to a surge was a 55-year high of 1,136 tons bought by central banks, noting that the majority of these purchases went unreported. That marks a 152% increase over 2021, when central banks bought just 450 tons of gold. The World Gold Council attributed the spike to geopolitical uncertainty and, of course, high inflation. Investment demand for gold increased by 10% to 1,107 tons, while holdings of gold ETFs, exchange-traded funds, saw smaller outflows in 2022 than the year before. Jewelry consumption actually dropped 3% last year to about 2,086 tons, still pretty significant, with much of the weakness concentrated in the fourth quarter as gold prices rallied. Total annual gold supply inched 2% higher last year to 4,755 tons, as I mentioned, with mine production notching a four-year high. The WGC said 2022 was not only the 13th straight year of net purchases of gold, but also the second highest level of annual demand on record back to 1950, boosted again by over 400 tons of demand in both the third and fourth quarters. The group's annual survey of policymakers revealed that the key drivers behind holding gold were its performance during times of crisis and its role as a long-term source of value. It's hardly surprising, then, that WGC noted that in a year scarred by geopolitical uncertainty and rampant inflation, central banks opted to continue adding gold to their coffers at an accelerated pace. Now, the majority of the central bank buying in 2022 came from emerging markets. It's not too surprising, with the Central Bank of Turkey being the largest buyer at a record 542 tons. China, India, Egypt, Qatar, Iraq, the UAE, and Oman all significantly boosted their gold reserves over the course of the year as well. Yes, 2022 was marked by that difficult backdrop of rapid interest rate hikes and a strong dollar for much of the year. Yet the fourth quarter resurgence was enough to see gold prices eke out a slight gain for 2022, with a 3% quarterly gain taking the precious metal to a 0.4% annual increase in price. Gold typically weakens in times of rising interest rates and a strong dollar, partly because it's priced in U.S. dollars, despite most demand originating from outside our country. Two big to fail bank analysts also noted that since gold's a non-interest-bearing asset, it usually becomes less attractive to institutional investors who can buy lots of treasuries and other interest-bearing assets when rates rise. Yet, 2023, off to a great start. Gold up over 6.5% in the first 5 weeks, hitting an intraday high of about 1955 this morning, before paper traders in particular began to take some profits, causing a price drop. Anyway, as we always like to say here, it's almost always a good time to add more gold to your nest egg, given its long-term store of value. Now, we've seen estimates of gold going to $2,000, $2,300, even $3,000 by the end of 2023. Of course, we don't know where it will end up, given all the craziness, volatility, and uncertainty. But we do know one thing you should keep in mind. 1-800-375-4188. Discount Gold and Silver Trade and call us for all your gold and silver needs. Now, we talked a little bit about this earlier in the first segment. American workers are getting smaller raises. Counterintuitively, that may be good news for the economy and for hopes that the U.S. can avoid a broad or deep recession. The big question facing the economy right now is whether Fed policymakers can bring down inflation without driving up unemployment and putting literally millions of people out of work. Economists are pointing to some encouraging signs that have recently emerged on that front. One, inflation has moderated over the past 6 months, though it remains far too high, and the job market overall has impressively resilient. Despite high-profile layoffs in tech and a few other sectors, the Labor Department tells us that overall unemployment remains at a half-century low. But many economists, including at the Fed, have viewed those signs of progress warily. And that's partly because they've been burned before. Or I should say they've burned themselves before. Initially dismissing high inflation as temporary, as Melody said earlier today, only to see it prove more severe and last longer than almost anyone anticipated. It's also partly because of signs within the economic data that suggest inflation may persist. Chief among those signs, well, wages, which have been rising much faster than they were before the pandemic. Fed officials have repeatedly argued it'll be harder for inflation to fall back to their long-term goal of 2%, as long as wages keep rising at a rate of 5% or more a year, as they've been since the middle of 2021. On Tuesday, however, there was a hopeful sign. Private sector wages and benefits, as measured by the government's Employment Cost Index, rose just 1% in the final 3 months of 2022, the equivalent of a 4.2% annual growth rate. Jerome Powell called the data constructive in his press conference yesterday and applauded the evidence of moderating inflation, even as he warned that both pay and prices were still rising faster than policymakers were, well, comfortable with. And as Melody said, ordinarily faster pay increases are better for both workers and the economy as a whole. Indeed, one of the most persistent problems in the decade before the pandemic was that wages for the typical worker were rising far too slowly. Well, when that began to change in 2021, many cheered it as evidence that the balance of economic power was, well, shifting back toward workers. But it's important to remember that the late pandemic economy, well, hasn't been particularly friendly to workers despite their rapidly rising wages. And we know why, because prices have been rising even higher. After adjusting for inflation, hourly pay actually fell again last year. Again, showing that workers on average saw their standard of living decline. There were certain exceptions to that, like the lowest paid in the service industries, but ultimately what matters for workers and their family isn't wage growth per se, it's wage growth in relation to inflation. An economy with 4% wage growth and 2% inflation will be far better for workers than one with 6% wage growth and 8% inflation. All right, last today. Look, enough already. Enough. I mean, first, oil giant ExxonMobil on Tuesday reported a record $56 billion profit last year, marking a historic high for that oil company. Last Friday, Chevron posted a record $36.5 billion profit. And now, British oil giant Shell today posted its highest ever annual profit, bolstered, it says, by soaring oil and gas prices and robust demand since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine last year. Shell reported adjusted earnings of just shy of $40 billion for 2022. This comfortably surpassed the $28.4 billion in 2008 by 40%. Which Shell had said was the firm's previous annual record. It's also more than double the company's 2021 profit of $19.3 billion. Analysts polled by Refinitiv had expected 2022 net profit to come in at $38 billion. Amazing. And what does Shell do? Well, it announced the $4 billion share buyback program, which is expected to be completed by its first quarter results due out in early May, plus a 15% dividend per share increase to shareholders for the fourth quarter. Now, price cuts to its customers? Forget that. Shell CEO Wael Swan said in his first earnings interview since taking over operations on January 1st. It's been a huge year for Shell and a huge year to look back on as well. I feel privileged to be stepping into this role at such a great point in the company's history. My focus will be very much around performance and capital discipline. The West's largest oil and gas companies, ladies and gentlemen, are expected to rake in combined profits of $200 billion. For last year. The extraordinary scale of the industry's earnings has renewed criticism and has sparked calls for a big oil windfall profits tax. And maybe that's why some production levels at the West Texas Basin are up this month. Swan, for his part, said windfall taxes or price caps simply erode confidence in the investment stability, and so I do worry about some of the moves being made. probably referring to the $2 billion hit it plans, Shell plans to take for the fourth quarter because of new windfall-like profit taxes from the European Union and the UK. Shell said its cash capital expenditure outlook for the year sits between $23 to $27 billion. Now, of that, Swan did say that roughly one-third, if not more, would go into areas like renewables. Shell, which is aiming to become a net zero emissions business by 2050, said that adjusted earnings for its renewable and energy solutions unit came in at $293 million for the fourth quarter. That's down from $383 million in the third. Mark Van Baal, founder of Dutch group Follow This, says Shell can't claim to be in transition as long as investments in fossil fuels dwarf investments in renewables. The bulk of Shell's investments remain tied to fossil fuel businesses because the company doesn't have a target to slash its total CO2 emissions this decade. That, again, is according to Van Baal. In recent quarters, big oil execs have defended their rising profits and said the significant disruption to global energy markets due to the war in Ukraine has reaffirmed the importance of helping to solve the energy trilemma. According to a statement to investors from BP CEO Bernie Looney late last year, this refers to secure, affordable, and lower carbon energy. Climate campaigners and activist shareholders have been sharply critical. Friends of the Earth says that Shell's annual profits more than doubled last year, while millions of people have been facing the impossible choice between putting food on the table and heating their homes is simply staggering. People can see the injustice of paying eye-watering energy costs while big oil and gas firms rake in billions. Well, on that note, going to have to say so long for today. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also, be on the lookout for our What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Todd, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye.